With the inception and traction that blockchain and crypto has gathered, the world is possibly on the verge of the largest evolution since the mainstream of the internet. Given the fluidity and dynamic nature of this technology, business leaders, enthusiasts, and veterans all need to band together to navigate the current and upcoming storms. Participants in Web 3.0 want a trusted resource that gives them pertinent information about projects, tokens, technology, and businesses. We are business people talking the business of crypto. We are YWhales.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, YWhales, wherever in the world you are today. So today is episode 21 of YWeb 3, Navigating Frontier Tech. It is Thursday, March 7th, 2024. And in this episode, we're going to go through a lot of regulatory updates and try to shed some light on some significant policy decisions, both in the United States and abroad. There's a lot of ETF news. We've got some new ETFs going, and we've had a lot of success, huge success, billion-plus dollar per day inflows on the current Bitcoin ETFs. And then a lot of really big shifts also in the U.S. Supreme Court decisions. Crypto is not an established base, and we're seeing that happen live and in real time. On the financial front, we want to highlight some really big strategic moves by some of the largest Bitcoin holders. And we really want to talk about TradFi's transition into blockchain technologies. Today, Bitcoin is at $67,000. Huge win. I remember just a few months ago, we were talking about it down in the 20s. The NASDAQ is at 16,157, up from last week. And I've got a couple really amazing guests with me today. So I really want to go ahead and kick it up right off because you guys are new. We just met today for the first time. So Riaz, go ahead and give us a little bit of background of, you know, kind of who you are, where you came from, and what you guys have been working on today.
Sounds great. I mean, first of all, thanks so much, Jay, for hosting us. We're really excited to be here. But yeah, great to meet you in person, like in podcast for the first time today. I'm Riaz Faizuloboy. I've been actually working with NASS, who's here with us, for almost a decade. We're co-founders at Bastion. We've been in the space for a while, starting together in security at Docker, then moving to founding engineers and early engineers at Anchorage, the first institutional custodian with an OCC banking charter. And we were also at Facebook, where we architected and built out the wallet infrastructure to support billions of users to transact safely with Diem, known as Libra in the past. And most recently, before Bastion, we were both at Andreessen Horowitz Crypto, where I was CTO and NASS was CISO. So we've been in the space from different angles, institutional, retail, VC for a while. I'm really excited to be building Bastion now to help in the ecosystem. And with that, I'll pass it back.
Yeah, I mean, you guys really hit some OG titles there. I mean, that's really amazing to kind of like really hear and re-understand how big and long, you know, some of the space is. I mean, everyone like just goes in cycles. And so we're getting ready to start a new cycle here. And everyone forgets like the coins and the infrastructure today is in some cases, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old. And in a lot of ways, people think like that was really recent. But crypto is like 4x. Like, you know, 1 year in crypto is 4 years in the normal world. And so I really am excited to kind of hear your opinions because and thoughts today, because it's so cool to see us kind of having our next rise into the next bull run and really wanting to hear, you know, what you guys have been building over the last winter cycle. So fabulous. Nassim, please, again, same thing, a little bit of your background, and really excited to get a little bit more concept of what Bastion is and what you guys are working on.
That sounds great. And again, same as Riaz, thanks so much for having us. And Riaz and I obviously have very much a copy-pasted background, have been really following each other across different companies and building hopefully just infrastructure that helps the space become more and more mature over time and really bring safety to all types of businesses, institutions, enterprises, and so on. And Bastion is really no different. We kind of took the key learnings from all the pieces of infrastructure that we've built across Anchorage and Facebook and now Meta and Andreessen Horowitz also advising the entire portfolio, and decided to build essentially a piece of infrastructure that we wish we had or we wish our portfolio companies had at Andreessen Horowitz, really supporting both the seamless onboarding of users at large, but in a very regulated and compliant way. So we decided to take the approach of being a wallet infrastructure provider that actually provides both the regulatory safety by being a money transmitter and money services business and really kind of like holding the highest standards when it comes to best practices on the regulatory side and compliance, But also beyond that, building infrastructure that goes way beyond wallets. I think that a lot of companies just realize like, hey, like I need more than just getting all of my users or my systems on chain. I actually need infrastructure that understands how to make it faster, more cost efficient for me, and safer. So Bastion is really beyond wallets. It's a piece of infrastructure that understands how to make things faster and cheaper for you. And sometimes it also means avoiding the chain. Sometimes it means settling with the chain in various ways that really make things cheaper and faster. So that's what we call a smart transaction routing system and are excited to bring to market for large enterprises who will be able to save probably over 90% of their gas costs by using Bastion.
No, that's huge. And you know, again, this is our first time meeting here. So one of the two biggest challenges I've said, and there's a lot of challenges in Web3, but the two biggest ones are wallets and bridges. You know, wallets are a massive point of failure. And I think that self-custody is everyone's right. I just think it's really stupid in most cases. You know, when you start getting into the institutional grade things like what you guys have built in the past and what you're building today, you know, you have to have so much more than just like on and off, like in and out. Like there's, you know, when you have large institutions, you know, there's sometimes dozens to 100 different layers of permissions of what people can do, what's authorized, how to manage that. And blockchain lends itself so well to this, but it's really a lot harder to do than most people understand. And so I'm really excited to kind of dive a little bit more into that later today. And then bridges, you know, massive point of failure when you start wrapping things that you have these IOUs that can become worthless from no, you know, you could have the perfect wallet system, you can have the perfect bet. But if suddenly you have, you know, smart contract issues or whatever the case is with that bridge, you know, that's a big problem. So I love hearing how you're solving this and trying to say like, look, blockchain does a lot of things really well, but in some cases, you know, hey, we have systems that can be more secure, better audited and everything else. And I love seeing that blend of Web2 and Web3. So really excited to kind of have you guys here and chat through that today.
Likewise.
Yeah, fabulous. So let's just dive right into it. So this is a new show, and I love how you guys are going to be able to kind of dive in and kind of talk about this from a really personal standpoint, because you're going to understand a lot of why this exists. Story number one, right off the bat, TradFi melting down. You know, so hate to see it. You know, we saw Silvergate and Silicon Valley Bank late last year kind of go through these meltdown cycles, and it was, you know, truly like, hey, these are the problems. The bank that acquired this, New York Community Bank, is down 42% yesterday. They had to halt trading. I forget that they can do that to stop things, because we're used to in the crypto world, like, if it's going to go down, it's going to go down until the pain really stops. But they had to halt trading. Otherwise, it probably would have continued past the 42% decline. And this is really what the infrastructure you guys are building is to replace, is that the old banking system of not understanding what has been going on behind the scenes can be mitigated, because everyone sees every step that's going along the way of how these institutions are being managed.
Totally. And that's where you hit it right away, is the transparency and openness of blockchain is a, in many cases, you know, feature, not a bug. Of course, we can talk about privacy, and there are ways with ZK and other technologies to preserve that. But yeah, having a system where, whether it's the code, whether it's the transactions on chain, that transparency lends itself well to understanding what's actually going on in the ecosystem. Is there something that should be fixed, or like some upcoming event or past event that should be taken into account when thinking about what's happening on chain and what users' funds, and keeping them safe? And that's where we really view this as, you know, really important for blockchain. Reason why, and you look at the roots of Bitcoin, like libertarianism, and like that. Obviously, now we're seeing more and more institutional adoption, more and more safety for users and businesses, and that feature is still important for this industry. So, I think this is an example here.
Before we start on our next topic, here's something really exciting. Everyone struggles with these really highly complex, you know, intricate Ethereum names. ENS has a solution that's really game-changing for you. Revolutionizing your digital identity with ENS. Transform long, complex Ethereum name addresses into easy-to-remember names, safely, securely, and uniquely yours. Visit ens.app to get started today, and ENS welcomes you to the new internet. Nassim, you know, you talked a little bit about, you know, what you guys are building and why, you know, how it in a, just kind of, because I want to bring back in a little bit for people to understand, you know, how much infrastructure you guys are building. when we saw, we've seen crashes before, you know, with FTX, within literally hours, people were able to dive in and say, here's what occurred, where, you know, back in the Bear Stearns day, that was like, you know, 6 to 12 months of investigations to get a fraction of the information out that we had. So, you know, speed to lead is always one of those important things. How does the infrastructure you guys have worked on today and worked on in the past helping to prevent like these issues from these archaic industries?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that there are two parts to it. The first one is from a technology standpoint, and the second aspect is actually from a kind of corporate governance and kind of like compliance at the operational and kind of like governance layer on the corporate side. I do feel like, you know, if you look at FTX, actually, just, you know, also a very interesting kind of case that, you know, the problems were not really related to crypto. It was actually linked to a fiat account, right? So a lot of the issues that we're seeing are actually not linked really to crypto per se. It's really more of a problem at the governance and kind of like transparency of accounting perspective. Hence why, from a regulatory standpoint, it's so important to have these financial audits and kind of like operations audited and corporate governance audited on a regular cadence, right? And very excited to bring that and really see more companies take this approach. But I also think that having the ability to offer an infrastructure that is interoperable, even if you keep things off chain, being interoperable 24/7 with a very transparent system forces you as an infrastructure provider or as product builders to really keep things as transparent as possible. Because the reality is that if you look at the vast majority of banks, they will only settle every so often with kind of, you know, very public, more open, you know, networks, and that is problematic. And so on our end, really wanted to build an infrastructure that understands when and how to use the chain, but really is interoperable 24/7 with it, so that you are held to the standards of transparency and openness.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, white collar crime is white collar crime. I mean, it's like, you know, but anything we can do to mitigate that, manage that. And so, you know, in this article, we're hearing, you know, it's loans, it's this, you know, we've seen so many things happen with these banks. And, you know, this is where the DeFi lending platforms come in, that everyone can see where the reserves are and so much else. And so I love, you know, that it takes a lot of people to understand that it's not Bitcoin that's going to solve this problem. It's a great start, and we're seeing the infrastructure, you know, going just now being started to be built for them. But it took centuries to get to the modern banking system where it is today. And the fact that we're a decade into blockchain and making the inroads that you guys are today shows how much faster we can move. But we probably still have about another, you know, 5 to 10 years before it's truly, there's a global network of, you know, infrastructure for the global banking network built on blockchain. And we kind of get rid of the SWIFT system that is the problem.
Yeah, it's a good point that we're early for sure. And that's where I think it's like, to your point, it's early, but the acceleration and just the speed at which we're getting faster is really promising in blockchain. And that's where I think NASA and I are really excited, both for, you know, coming from Bastion's perspective, but just the ecosystem at large being leveling up so quickly.
Fabulous. Sorry to cut you off.
No, and I was about to say that there is kind of like this great quote that I love reminding myself of from Naval, that says that open source means you only solve every single problem once, which actually just creates so much acceleration for us, right? I feel like blockchain beyond openness is a weapon for standardization of best practices and integrations. So I really felt like beyond just like the openness of the technology, just the speed at which we standardize things, whether that's identity, whether that's money movements, lending, and many other primitives of different different industries is incredible, honestly.
I think you bring up a really good point about that. And I just want to take a second to highlight, you know, the concept of open source and transparent code doesn't mean the data is transparent, but the code that it operates on transparent versus, you know, closed door, you have no idea. It's a walled garden of which only a few regulators that may or may not even understand what they're looking at are allowed in. And I think the good comparison is, let's look at Facebook versus Twitter, you know, since Elon has taken over. Elon has gutted the entire company of Twitter from where it was, removed what, 90% of the team and staff, made all of their most of their code public and transparent, and the system is running, you know, more efficiently now than it did when it had, you know, like 10 times the amount of staff compared to Facebook, where it's, you know, it's hard to keep secrets. It's hard to have, you know, hundreds of different databases of codes that only a few people understand because they want to nuance and fluff everything, which is what happens in these closed door systems. So I think that the concept that you hit on, which is really huge, is open source is not properly understood by most people, but it really is the future to be able to say, like, is it even processing these transactions in a clear, compliant manner? Yes or no? And that's where levels of trust should be moving towards.
Agreed. And that's where I like your example of the Facebook and Twitter. And I think with blockchain, open source even goes a step further of, yeah, if you want to build on top of a chain, building applications or infrastructure around a chain, it becomes to what NASA was talking about, the interoperability and extensibility is a superpower that can enable more applications, more real world use cases, and really up level the financial system and experiences with whether it's tokens, whether it's real world assets that are tokenized, NFTs, whatever it may be, products that people want to actually use.
That's fabulous. So, you know, let's jump over to, we'll spend plenty of time in US reg, because it's the one that everyone, you know, wants to be solved most. We generally see a majority of the world adopting blockchain at a much faster pace. You know, Europe has been really leading the way in my perspective with a number of things. I think MiCA, MiCAR is a fabulous point of regulation coming out in June of this year, of which we're taking advantage with FinRamp to launch our real world asset tokenization platform there. But you know, Africa, I spent some time in South Africa and other points, was a really, like, they're desperate for to get the regulation out of the government's hands because there's so much corruption. So we just saw Binance is, you know, they've got a perfume out, so they're working on some of their core issues and problems, you know, very clearly. But they're kind of getting pushed out of Nigeria in a variety of ways. And one of those is they don't want the Nigerian currency to be traded in any way, shape, or form because, you know, crypto traders are just so much more advanced than TradFi traders in some capacities. And so they're actually not, so basically to have a government say, we don't want our currency in any way, shape, or form or derivative of it to be traded, and had to get converted everyone down to Tether, I think is really telling of how scared some governments are of even, you know, everyone's looking at CDBCs, but how terrified governments really need to be, because now all of a sudden there's transparency. And fiat does not work in a transparent manner in most countries. Reyes, you want to, like, what's your thoughts on this?
It's interesting. I mean, totally agree on the transparency piece. I think, too, back to our earlier conversation, there's still the infrastructure pieces are coming into place where we can, in the acceleration of getting all the tooling in place to replace currencies wholeheartedly, I think we're still a ways out. And the way NASA and I view it is, like, crypto is another rail, and there are some rails where it's super efficient and it makes total sense. There are other rails, parts of the interactions where it doesn't make sense. And this is a tricky one, right? Given just the stability of a country and like of a society, right? So I think it's interesting. I don't have anything like any hot take beyond that. I think we're going to see where things go. I think, like, we need to have infrastructure as well, like get to the, like, parity essentially. But yeah, I don't know, yeah, if you have thoughts there.
Yeah, I was about to say that every time that I see kind of similar headlines, whenever, you know, some form of crypto activity taken by, whether that's kind of like a crypto exchange or some platform, you know, and kind of like a hard stance is taken by regulators, it, at the end of the day, it ends up pushing users towards more peer-to-peer transactions, less, with just little to no regulatory oversight, because one path that crypto can take is literally just peer-to-peer transactions, right? With no safety for users or some form of kind of like underground, I would call it kind of like exchanges that can be, you know, more hurtful for retail. And so one thing that I'm very excited to see, not just in Nigeria, but just all over the world, is whenever regulators actually, you know, go hand in hand with these institutions, there might be gaps, right? But at the end of the day, the goal is for regulators to make things work with the players who are excited to bring the technology to the population. And we kind of ran into that at Meta when, you know, regulators definitely did take a very hard stance on Libra and on the wallet that we were building. But ultimately, we were trying to do everything right, right? And so I'm very excited about seeing more regulators, especially kind of like in the UK and many other jurisdictions, that are just working hard with product builders, infrastructure builders, central exchanges, and various financial institutions who want to bring the technology in a way that is safe and compliant with existing laws. So I'm very excited for it.
I think the other point to bring up is this is not a currency only problem. I mean, we think of issues like with even Netflix. You know, Netflix has to deal with hundreds and hundreds of jurisdictions around the world of what can be shown, what can't be shown, you know, what movie has this right. So we still have never solved this global economy. And crypto is global. I can go travel anywhere in the world, and Bitcoin is a household name of which they may not understand, but they know. They do understand that blockchain, you know, the basic of blockchain, even if they don't use it. And so it doesn't lend itself. It can if you want to focus it down, but blockchain is a global is what will open up a global economy. And so, you know, regulators are going to fall in line, and it's going to take a new generation to get into office to kind of usher these things in. And it's just really amazing to kind of see and hear from your guys' experience. You know, when you're back with Meta, it was like you guys were so ahead of the game that when you announced this, nobody even knew, you know, what the possibilities of a wallet attached to your Facebook account would be. And now we see Elon doing it with Twitter, and I'm sure that it's still somewhere on the roadmap for Facebook.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's where. Oh, go ahead, Ness.
Well, I was about to say that really, you know, pioneering Facebook, Meta was actually pioneering, you know, travel rule applied to crypto payments and a lot of things that really went very far when it came to kind of regulatory compliance with existing, you know, banking laws, essentially. So, and also, you know, as you mentioned, I think that the fragmentation of the laws and regulations is problematic for most innovators. And so I'm also personally very excited about, you know, Mika, for example, in Europe, trying to defragment essentially the kind of like per jurisdiction laws and kind of like decisions that have been made over the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's where I was going to add. I think to Nas's point, travel rule, I mean, there, just because it and to your point, Jay, about, you know, other forms of not just tokens, but content, data. With crypto, it's still possible to work with regulators and work hand in hand and collaborate and, you know, screen for illicit activity, whatever it may be. And it's a matter of just working hand in hand, gaining the clarity, and then for the right players to work on it, which they are. So I'm excited and optimistic.
Yeah, I entirely agree. I think that Mika, and we've spent a lot of time over in Europe with this, it is going to be such a worldwide game changer that most people have no idea what's coming. Because now there's that regulatory clarification. And let's bring that back to what I think we've all seen in the past, what happened. So the Bitcoin ETFs are less than 60 days old at this point. To me, it's, you know, the Bitcoin ETFs were the IPO of Bitcoin. Basically it's like, here's the public announcement of this, but it's a very strange way to look at it because you're taking a native cryptocurrency and now you're giving it access to traditional markets in a legal compliant manner. You know, listen, the first 30 days, anyone who was in the space kind of said like, look, just give it some time. It's going to take a minute to layer out. And there was a lot of FTX liquidations. There was a lot of, you know, Grayscale liquidations that kind of like needed to get out for the first time they could legally exit. Into TradFi and, you know, pay your taxes and all the things that you wanted to do. So people were stuck there. But now we're seeing, you know, for a week plus straight, $1 billion+ inflow. We're seeing, you know, hundreds of thousands. I think I saw the note that the ETFs now have acquired over 300,000 Bitcoin, you know, just in the first 60 days, which is massive. It's still, Grayscale is still larger, But Grayscale also started this when Bitcoin was like a couple hundred bucks. So, you know, very different cycles of now, you know, going back to an all-time high before it halving. And the point I want to make is now we have a legal wrapper on a single cryptocurrency. And we're seeing, and I just want to take a second and talk about like what that was like for you guys to watch over the last, you know, kind of 30, 60 days of the lead up to it, you know, what's your thoughts of it for it. And then we're kind of seeing really the game is just now getting ramped up of what people are making some moves on now that this pipeline is open. Riaz, you want to start?
Let's do it. Yeah. I mean, definitely really exciting to watch. I think a lot of what NASA have done in the past of getting crypto tokens, whatever it may be, in a safe way into the hands of people, this embodies all of that. And I think, you know, for the two of us and for Bastion and just for the space at large, we're really excited about bringing these experiences, like whether it be financial or like for other use cases, into people's hands in a way that minimizes risk for them, the end consumer, for the business. It's understandable what's actually happening. It's a known framework for people to conceptualize, and they're not having to dig deep into what is a smart contract, what is gas, what is all this stuff that I need to learn, because there's separately an education piece, and everyone is spinning education into a way that works for them, or making it's still overly complicated for most people. So making this accessible and safe, I think for us is just like it's a great moment for crypto and across all the cycles and all the other headlines that, you know, fly by, but excited to see this and momentum of where it goes going ahead into other instruments, other real world usable use cases for people.
Nassim, I want to highlight a point that you brought up a couple times already. And I think that there's what I learned from the Bitcoin ETFs and from talking to a lot of people that are TradFi that are excited about this. I believed it was the legal wrapper. What a lot of people were excited about was the fact that they don't have to think about custody. That they don't understand it. They don't get it. It's scary. They've tried it. They've failed. You know, how does that lend to you guys is like the opportunities of what you're building today? The fact that they can buy it from the same markets that it's being bought at with the ETFs, but there's clearly like a fear of custody of these things.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that this is why many users, and that was one of the reasons why we built Anchorage the way it is built, right? It's really providing the level of security and safety required essentially for institutional investors and institutions in general to hold very large amounts of Bitcoin, ETH, and other cryptocurrencies and assets. But ultimately, there needs to be more than that. There needs to be something that is in the hand of, companies and users where things can move, things can be used, right? It's not just about, hey, I'm going to invest in this and kind of like buy it and forget it for the next 40 years. People want to be able to leverage those things for whether that's for loans, whether that's for, payments and other aspects, right? So I think that the investment piece, you know, is very interesting. And, you know, the fact that prices are going up, but kind of like thinking of what Chris Dixon always refers to as kind of like the price innovation cycle, where prices go up, general interest go up. There are like new ideas from people who want to build products and then end up just, you know, kickstarting startups and new projects. And, you know, the machine goes on and on, right, across different cycles. So hopefully we see more of that. Hopefully this interest just kicks off more ideas on how to leverage the technology, how to leverage the assets in a way that can really benefit everyone on the internet, retail and businesses.
Yeah, no, I love that. So one of the stories we have in front of us is our favorite Bitcoiner, Sailor. MicroStrategies wanted to do a convertible debt offering. They said they wanted to raise $600 million. And this just shows you that crypto winter is over and we're now back in the bull cycle. So you said, hey, I want to raise $600 million for my public company to buy more Bitcoin. It has nothing to do with the business model of which we are supposed to be operating in, but we're going to act as this Bitcoin kind of custody service that has access. I don't even know what to call MicroStrategy anymore. They've got 193,000 Bitcoin that they've are now up on. So they've done very, very well. And he's raised not $600 million within 48 hours. He raised $700 million within 48 hours, and his interest rate is 0.62%. People are throwing money at him right now to get into the space and get this experience. I would just love to hear what you guys even think about this, because I saw this story come through and I go, I don't get it. I just don't. And I love Saylor, but I wish I could understand some of the things that he says and does, but sometimes he looks terrible and other times he's a winner, man.
Yeah. I mean, my initial take is that it actually fits really nicely into that price innovation cycle paradigm that Nash just explained from Chris at Andreessen Horowitz, where prices are going up, there's interest, and it manifests itself in different ways, right? Whether it's like a strategy and Saylor doing this, or if it's, you know, new projects being built. For us, we're excited that there's just more activity happening beyond this person getting hacked or Bitcoin is bad, right? These like FUD articles against crypto. And that's where, and we've seen these cycles, there's been multiple cycles. Hopefully this one isn't just a cycle and it's sustained growth. And that's where every time, you know, there's been activity, there's been layering up more and more infrastructure, more and more clarity about how to safely interact, both from like a security, but also like a regulatory and compliance angle with crypto. And we're building up more and more and more infrastructure to where there's more interest, there's more availability, whether it's through like these type of instruments or products. And so the way that I view it is that it's, things are moving and things are being built. It's exciting for the space at whole and is up leveling the ecosystem at large. And, you know, we'll see what happens here with a specific exact example, but generally excited for where we are today and, you know, to your point, out of this like bear and into some, you know, sustained growth, ideally, and in adoption.
Yeah. From your guys' experience and the same, again, I think it's just a conceptual, it's nothing on the show notes. If we didn't have Luna and we didn't have FTX, would we have had as harsh of a winter as we had?
It's a good question. I feel like, transparently, in my mind, those are more features than bugs of the system, in the sense that we need to, I feel like it's important for us to constantly cycle after cycle, kind of like weed out the thing that we know are bad for us as an industry. And the harsher they are, the better they end up being for the space as a whole for the long term, right? If you look at it and kind of like on a 1 year scale, like obviously, you know, FTX was terrible, but at least it will actually create a mindset. And the part that was interesting is that honestly, at the last bear market, not this one, the one before, everyone was thinking that crypto was going to die, but it was not the case this time, right? People were really thinking throughout this entire bear market, you know, crypto is here to stay. It's just a matter of when, not if. And so it is really, in my opinion, seeing those bad things happen, fraud cases and so on being tackled, will actually both kind of like accelerate, giving us the regulatory clarity that we need to operate safely in the space, and also just build awareness for anyone building in the system that, you know, bad things are uncovered and they're going to go wrong. If things are meant to go wrong, they're going to go wrong. So it doesn't prevent from, you know, seeing, as you can see here, kind of like companies, sovereign funds, and so on, adding Bitcoin and soon more assets to their balance sheets, right? And what that means is that there will be companies built around kind of like rec tech, around custody, around, you know, different parts of the infrastructure around those investments, around those products, that will actually foster innovation in the long term. So overall, just very bullish on our resiliency, honestly, as an industry. We're just much more resilient than any industry before us.
I was going to say, I was jumping back to something you said earlier, which is how early we on. And I think early we are right now, because we're seeing this little splintering of in my work kind of view is Web3. There's the degen side, and you know, the degens are going to do what the degens are going to do, and they're great. But suddenly TradFi, the institutions and everyone's paying quite a bit more attention. And so I kind of look as there was a couple of court cases that you know were highlighted here recently. One was, you know, Sam was sent to prison, you know, like just like the book thrown at him, uses fraud, doesn't matter what you used, you committed fraud. Do Kwon was indicted, and CZ was forced to step down. And so these are three large things. And then it seemed like in conjunction with themselves, suddenly it became like institutions were like, okay, it wasn't a problem with the blockchain. It wasn't a problem with the cryptocurrencies. It was not a technical issue. It was a pure fraud. And we can point at these people and say, look, we're going to do our fiduciary duties now. We've done our research. Now we're going to go ahead and pump money into these ETFs and back into the VC space, which is where you guys live today.
Exactly. And that's, I was going to say that like the corporate governance and fraud piece, still, that's still important for crypto and blockchain regardless. Yeah. And we're looking where we are right now, right? Prices is up, interest is up. It's really like the time to innovate and the time to really think about what's next. And learning like the lessons learned from past cycles or incidents. Obviously, I think, you know, unfortunate, like what it meant for other projects and ecosystem at the time. But looking forward, and the silver lining is that for companies and projects building today, taking the lessons learned and being able to ask these questions with providers they work with or to themselves even of like, how are we thinking about this? Learning from the past, how do we work with the best in class, like infrastructure providers, chains, whatever it may be, thinking about from the corporate governance beyond just the technical piece as well, taking all those lessons learned and be able to go move faster and safer going ahead. I think we're in a good position.
Yeah, the technology is unbelievable, but it requires governance to actually get off the ground if we want the big institutions here. So, and I think to highlight something you said, which is like, it's now a very serious play. So BRICS, which is to me, like I've been saying for a long time, that this is anyone that's not paying attention to BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and there's, you know, I think about 10 other nations that have signed up here recently, is they are now stating that they are going to build a blockchain-based payment system that they're going to integrate with. So they've, Russia and a variety of others, China have been kind of removed from the SWIFT system. The United States quite simply weaponized SWIFT in a variety of ways, which you know, in the recent Putin interview, he said was a massive mistake to do because now it's caused them to force to look for other solutions. And blockchain is without a doubt the best solution out there if you're going to start from scratch. As people that work in the space have lived in the space and are probably will tie into this, you know, what's your thoughts on, you know, kind of large nations? They're not talking about CDBCs. They're literally talking about an entire payment system with blockchain.
Yeah, I think lots of different ways to look at it. I think in general, for the space, it's interesting because this technology has always been, there's been different narratives like, oh, it's anti-government, but then now it's technology has proven that it's valuable for various rails that can work with actual, you know, currency and actual people in their daily lives. I think there's something to be said too about our earlier conversation about crypto and blockchain, a lot of it being open source, being interoperable, and open to see, like, you know, we'll have to wait and see of how, and there's a range there, how open you can be with blockchain. You can have a more private blockchain, all these different levers you can pull. And I think that we'll see where things go. So I think it's interesting. I think it's early. I think the fact that the technology is being suggested for a large scale overall is just a validation that this is really valuable technology. As for where it goes, I mean, we'll see where things go. I don't have a crystal ball prediction here.
Yeah, but the I think the thing that's important, and Nassim, I love your thoughts on this. It's a format. You know, if they said we're going to build something, you know, Oracle's our partner, we're going to build a new payment system. We wouldn't even talk about it. Nobody cared. It would be just another fiat based system. If it's on blockchain, regardless of parts of it are private, parts of it are public, or whatever chain they're going to end up using, and multi-chain is the future, in my opinion. You know, Nassim, what's your, like, if they hired you right now and said, we want to build a global ecosystem that anyone can use, whether it's in a BRICS-related country or the United States, but we just want to do it, like, where would you start? What would be your, like, couple words of advice to do it right?
Yeah, they're a
small question right now.
It's a tough one. There are different parts. I think that leveraging already battle-tested core infrastructure is key. Reyes and I love the idea of not reinventing the wheel. A lot of the blockchain solutions and kind of like infrastructure that is out there is great, works, and is, you know, getting more and more battle-tested every single day, whether that's with, you know, inscriptions and kind of like on-chain spam, but like other types of attacks, and 100% kind of like reusing something that is already built and works amazingly well, whether you're, you know, taking advantage of all the innovation that came out of Meta's blockchain with, you know, Aptos and Sui kind of like and Mr. Labs team kind of like building, I would say kind of like the successors of what we had built at Meta to make really just blockchains much safer, much more efficient, or more, you know, more prominent kind of like EVM ecosystems. At the end of the day, I really fundamentally believe that it comes down to the integrations and the access to people and businesses, right? Like I would 100% focus on, I mean, transparently, we've built what we think is the go-to solution for businesses and enterprises and financial institutions, neobanks, investment platforms to be able to get access both from their treasury and kind of like operational perspective, but also for the end users and having both work in harmony. So I would probably use Bastion transparently and really focusing on building deep distribution and compliance layer that integrates natively with the chain and the wallet piece. That's probably what I would do. But my take on this is that I just want to see the US maintain the dollar's dominance and their, I would say, kind of like preventing geopolitical power shifts. You know, it's important for us to maintain our velocity at the, you know, in terms of innovation. And it's on the regulators to work as well as the innovators to work together on driving that. So hopefully the US actually does move faster than, you know, the Kremlin on this and I hope so. But, yeah, it really will mean for US regulators to work more and more with infrastructure builders for sure.
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Beyond Enterprises, the ultimate 360-degree partner for companies ready to embrace the power of blockchain in their business strategies. Beyond Enterprises stands out as a beacon of expertise with a blockchain-agnostic approach that has seen successful projects on Ethereum, EOS, and Arc. Guided by blockchain thought leaders and fueled by inspired advisors, the team has played a pivotal role in over 40 successful ventures spanning token generation events, security token offerings, exchanges, and more. From healthcare to travel, finance, and beyond, Beyond Enterprises has left a massive mark on diverse industries. Elevate your business strategy today with pioneers of blockchain integrations, Beyond Enterprises, trusted 360 partner. So real quick, I think this really ties into the next story because we're talking about infrastructure, we're talking about all these things, and I 100% agree with the Bitcoin ETF. I think it was the right thing to do. Bitcoin is Bitcoin; it's its own thing. But now I think, you know, there's an ETH ETF coming, and I think it's a bad idea. I think that it's, you know, that's Ethereum is an EVM chain. There's uses for it. And so just acquiring Ethereum and causing gas prices to go up and kind of putting these because they can't stake them, they can't do anything with them, it just puts into storage, I think is deprecating a little bit to our industry to do this. And it's not necessary. We need people to go the other direction at this point now and start, you know, using these is the way they're supposed to be, whether they're, you know, is some type of currency or some type of server credit. And kind of really love your concept and idea. Do you think that we need more ETFs for cryptocurrencies to come into the stock market? Or do we need it to be the other direction around where we need the stock market to now start going into blockchain in a regulated manner so that we can use these new rails that you and everyone else has been developing for so many years?
It's a good question. I've thought about this a bit. I think there's still merit in the ETF in that the same way that the Bitcoin ETF framed Bitcoin in a way that was friendly and well known to investors today and consumers, that there could be this accessible way to enter that may be a shorter path than the longer path of infrastructure that I think also, I agree with you, I think is where we want to go. It's just a matter of having the right infrastructure providers and the right clarity for us to get there and the right adoption. So I view this as a step in the right direction to get to that adoption.
Okay.
End game, we'll see. And I think differently. I think with, you know, EVM and being able to build additional, whether it's tokens, experiences, whatever it may be, is the superpower of Ethereum beyond just holding it, being able to stake, do all these things, being active. And that's where the infrastructure has to also be active in a way that, of course, selfishly we've been building, but there's other great players in the space as well. And that's where getting that adoption, getting that clarity from regulatory side, working hand in hand, being compliant, being safe, secure, so that we're ready for a user prime time going to consumers is going to be key.
Yeah.
So, you know, Nassim, and again, to point a little bit of a question at you as well, let's remove the price. Let's just say that Ethereum is always going to trade for a dollar. Coin, like it's not a price thing. Do we want this much removed from the active market? Because if it's in an ETF, it means it's in essentially cold storage. They're using it as an investment principle. But we see what happens when the chains gets busy is gas prices become, you know, unusable. And now the technology you guys are going, you know, ZKs and all the other stuff, like that's why your business is going to work is because we're deprecating these layer ones by removing these tokens. You know, what is it a right or wrong way to think that this is kind of anti-innovation to remove these potentially very large amounts of tokens from an ecosystem that needs them to operate?
Yeah, it's it feels like the store of value always exists in tension with the utility of the chain itself, right? Like even for Bitcoin, right? Many people consider it kind of like the ultimate store of value, while other people want to leverage it for payments. And the higher the price of Bitcoin, the more pressure it puts on scaling solutions such as, you know, Lightning networks and so on to get the gas costs down for these kind of like additional scaling solutions that bring utility, such as payments, but in lending other aspects. And I feel like the utility narrative was, as you kind of like pointed out, like a lot more core to Ethereum, right? Having this kind of like native programmability, like highly programmable kind of shared, you know, virtual machine that anyone could execute code on at any given time. I definitely agree that it may sound counterintuitive, but in a sense, it almost acts as a forcing function for innovators to build more highly scalable solutions on top of L1s. Because ultimately, even if you are to kind of like somehow maintain the prices down, you're not going to be able to get billions of people and dozens or hundreds of actions from people on a layer one, whatever the price is, yeah. Right? The infrastructure is not built for it. So it does act as a forcing function for innovation on at the scalability layer, with which we're seeing, you know, L2s and L3s and different essentially methods to get there. Our solution was to actually take things off chain first. And that's like, you know, the most pragmatic view that, you know, we think we had. And that is just a way essentially to, decongest essentially the L1, because they're not made for this global adoption anyway. So we may as well build scaling solutions that get accelerated by the fact that prices are going up essentially.
It's a really good point. And, you know, we're still learning, you know, and just remember back in the day when new technologies come along, nobody knows how to price them. The first cell phone I had, they charged me by the minute. Now they can't give away, you know, minutes to talk, you know, for me to talk. I don't even talk on the phone anymore. I just use data, and now data is, you know, unlimited. So, and we saw the same thing. The first dial-up modems, it was like, how many minutes were you going to be online for? Yeah. And now it's gotten to the point where it's just like, you know, stream it from space. You know, if you got Starlink with Elon, it's like, yeah, you know, go ahead, have all you can eat. There's only so much you can do with it. So I feel like we're going to get there, and we're seeing some iterations. You know, Ethereum's been around since 2014, 2015. So it's kind of a little bit older technology, but there's been such a massive ecosystem built on top of it. But we're now seeing new chains like Solana and other ones where like the price of the token almost becomes irrelevant because gas is just a fractional, you know, it's like, okay, instead of one penny, it's 1.3 pennies, even though the price is 4x in a few days. So I really feel like you guys are right, that it's these ecosystems that need to evolve. And it's the same way that Web 1 is. Nobody cares what website we're using. What, you know, is it Amazon S3 or is it Azure? Does it work? Is it compliant? Is it secure? And I think that's what you're essentially saying, is that like, it's going to take a lot of tools to make it usable, because in the raw form, It's chaos.
Yeah, it's definitely, there's that. I mean, even like Solana and other chains aside, within Ethereum, right, we have the L2s, like rollups being built on top, to both from like gas fee perspective, but even like just a latency, like the transaction time, right? Like users are not used to waiting seconds, yeah, minutes. Web pages load in milliseconds. And that's where, yeah, we, again, going back to like our early conversation about blockchain being a rail, especially for more active user-focused interactions or like even business-centric interactions that need to be instant, we see the future as a hybrid of both on-chain and off-chain, where certain interactions may happen off-chain first and then move on-chain in a similar way to where roll-ups eventually, you know, become consistent with L1. But to get to that millisecond, super low fee, and the best minds in the ecosystems are working on this, and L2s and other improvements to L1, our view is that it's going to take even more than that. And there are going to be layers of how, you know, how close to the chain you want to be, how, for lack of a better term, we talked about earlier, degen you want to be and close to the metal. But for businesses that don't want to know that there's crypto behind the scenes, they want it to feel like Web 2, we see the future as a hybrid about on-chain and off-chain.
As a question for you guys, do we need that much more speed? When I say that, meaning that like what we're going from is, you know, an ACH, you know, Swift world, which is days for settlement, you know, hours at best. You know, the reason why it shuts down every day is because they need the time to go reconcile and say, you know, here's what's did. Everyone moves some stuff around, a bunch of IOUs. So like we're, instead of going from hours and days, do we need microseconds? You know, does it need to be to be that fast? Because that's where, you know, you get into these, you know, points where it's like something happens that's bad and it's over. Like before you even realize you clicked the wrong thing or anything else, like, do we need to start building in some reasonable buffers to allow for human error or, you know, bots as they start becoming more in AI because it becomes more prevalent in blockchain? You know, do we need it to be like instantaneous settlement, or do we need to be able to find and say like an hour is totally fine? Like I want to get a notification and have an hour to confirm that this is happening or not.
Yeah, it's interesting because ultimately you can always artificially kind of like enforce, let's call it kind of time locks, time buffers, essentially for different purposes. The way we conceptualized it is that it is very kind of category and industry dependent. So for example, some of the companies that we work with and leverage Bastion are very geared towards gaming and social networks, where no one waits 4 seconds for the next kind of like piece of content or kind of like interaction to happen. So this is why we're, part of it is on the payment side, we come from just very far. And so this is definitely, you know, the improvement that you would get over time by kind of like the different iterations is definitely kind of like diminishing return in some cases. But in others, it is a requirement to have those things happen in real time. And not just value and money, but also all types of incentives and rewards and data, right? Because the great thing about blockchains is that they're programmable and they can actually move any form of information. And we're actually very excited about the non-financial aspect as well, just because so much of the internet that is non-financial is getting financialized. A lot of things that use, you know, a lot of interactions are getting financialized because you want to incentivize them for the data that you get in return, or the value that you get, you know, potentially through kind of, you know, subsequent redemptions and so on. So many businesses definitely care about this for highly active and social experiences, and sometimes kind of trading related as well, right? Like it can be also a huge bonus point. So definitely excited about trying to hit the right trade-off between, let's call it, decentralization and kind of like self-sovereignty and openness with the user experience and the costs, right? Like those will always live in tandem, and you can't have everything everywhere at the same time. It just doesn't happen. You're going to have to pick some of the properties. But again, there will be different solutions or different, different points on the spectrum, I would call it.
I love that. So what, like I said, as we're kind of coming here towards a close, I just want to make sure that we, you know, again, really great to have you guys on, and so many perspectives that I like are somewhat aligned and somewhat new for me to hear. So it's good for the audience to kind of get this, like, hey, you guys have been down in the ditches, you know, laying the fiber for years to be able to make this stuff work. What are some of the most exciting use cases you've seen outside of just financial? I think everyone's so focused on financial, and you can do all these really crazy wizardry things, but what's got you the most excited outside that?
It's a great question. And we've been seeing a lot of exciting projects, even from our past when working with Interest in Horowitz Crypto and at Facebook and Meta and in Anchorage. Lots of really interesting ones. I'd say one that's definitely been trending and is exciting is loyalty, and be able to have that cross, you know, tracked cross chains. So many brands and businesses often don't know who their actual consumer is, and being able to attest to a record that's on chain as a physical item may move through secondary markets or is gifted is a use case that we've been seeing brought up more and more, and is really, really interesting. Real world assets in general and being tokenized is very interesting. And as you well know, and I think is exciting for us, but I think in general too, with this price cycle, this price innovation cycle, we're just seeing more and more. I think every time we've had these cycles, and again, hopefully this is not just a cycle this time, we're able to be ushered into just this building and sustained growth. Just we have more and more infrastructure each time. We started with initially it was just Mt. Gox and a couple exchanges, then we brought on custodians and other more advanced financial instruments on exchange. Now we have L2s and improvements to the L1s, more L1s. There's an explosion and kind of, I think, just a good set right now. More and more happening across like gaming, other apps, and so each time I'm just more and more optimistic that we're getting like on the technology side, and then separately on the regulatory and just compliance clarity side, getting more and more and learning lessons along the way to where the whole package can be robust and safe and secure for these use cases to really thrive, right? Because I think the last thing any of us would love, like, want to happen is there's a great use case, but we were just not ready yet for whatever reason, yeah. And then we're back to the drawing board. So I don't think it's going to happen. I'm really optimistic, but yeah.
But that's us. We're always optimistic. Like, that's why we're in the space, is because, like, it's okay. We've already all forgot. Like, the fear greed index is back up at 90. So we've already forgotten about the last, 18 to 20 something months, of which crypto was a bad word. You couldn't, VCs weren't interested in anything we're doing, except for the ones that were highly educated that goes, we're great. Thank you so much for giving us a year plus to catch up. We see where this is going. We understand the technology and everything else. Just real quick, as we kind of go through this, is there anything else you guys want people to really know about Bastion, what you guys are doing, how to integrate with your systems, as we kind of bring this to a close? Nassim?
I was about to say, so I think that the part that we're very excited about actually on the non-financial side and really is something that we really want to power with Bastion is a better model essentially for people to have more access, more ownership of their assets, and for businesses to just capture better data on who their users are. And part of Bastion is really building the best analytics and kind of like source of data from businesses on their users off platform, which is not something that was possible before blockchains and Web3 essentially. So really excited to power a lot of solutions across the board where companies want to also get better data on their users off platform. Who is Jay? Once he leaves Nike.com, who is Jay when he leaves, NBA.com. Those are things that businesses are very excited about. And I do believe that wallets are essentially going to be the replacement for cookies. Cookies are getting, cut off essentially from the vast majority of platforms. And that is probably a good thing. And now wallets are going to become the better incentivized cookies, where users are going to have actually the right incentive structure to keep including businesses and companies across their journey on the internet and digital, physical, and for businesses to learn from that. And so Bastion is also here not just to onboard users and make things faster, but also provide businesses with the tools that they need to grow to understand better their users and build better experiences.
Love it. Love it. Really, like I said, really thankful for you guys to come on here and spend the time today. We know how busy you are. And over the last 20 months, like, we all had some time. We were working very hard. But now it's like the pedals to the metal. Everyone wants everything done, 6 months ago, even though no one was willing to invest in us during that time. So congratulations to you guys for your continued success in the space, continued innovation, because this is the type of infrastructure we need. And hopefully everyone watching here takes the time to go really check out Raiz and Nassim's projects, what they're working on. And these are live today. You can start using everything and you guys are able to onboard immediately, correct?
Yes, right. Thanks so much. Again, thanks for having us and thanks for the shout out. Everything is live. Would love to give demos to builders out there who are interested and would love to, build in the space with Bastion. We're, bringing security and compliance to help you build. But Jay, really excited and thankful for you having us on today.
Yeah. Love experienced entrepreneurs like you. Nassim, bring us home.
Yeah, excited to see all the builders who want to just get a free demo essentially of Bastion at bastion.com. Can learn more about our onboarding in a regulated way, the smart routing that we've been talking about, and really bringing just your cost and efficiency to the paroxysm and then data. We're very excited to jump on a call with every innovator that we can meet in this space.
Love it, guys. Why Whales? This is another episode of Why Web 3 in the books. Excited to see you guys next week. Have a good one. Talk soon.
Why Whales was founded in 2021 by Jay Steinbeck, a passionate entrepreneur and business owner, with the purpose of bringing YPO and YNG members together in the cryptoverse. Why Whales is a collaborative and confidential community centered around cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology, an exclusive crypto hub of more than 600 members. To be notified when we release new content, please subscribe to our show in your preferred listening app. For more information, visit www.ywhales.com. YWhales is not affiliated with YPO, but at this time only allow for YPO, YPO Gold, and YNG members due to privacy and confidentiality. Support and production for today's episode was done by Truthwork Media. Nothing in the podcast constitutes professional and/or financial advice, nor does any information on the podcast constitute a comprehensive or complete statement of the matters discussed or the law relating thereto.